You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Holy fuck, it's October. Welcome, friends, to Inside the Locker. My name is Ramon Ramirez. With me, as always, Logan Urie producing.
Howdy.
JC DeLeon holding it down.
What up, what up?
Adam Charles couldn't be here tonight. Elliot Fontanet is in traffic on the way, so we'll have him sit in as soon as he gets here. It happens. It is what it is. Lots to discuss. It's October. The first quarter of the season is over. We had this like big long preview thing where we just dropped every take that we had. We threw everything at the window, and all of a sudden, here we are. We know some things. We feel terrible about some things. Some of our fantasy teams are already dead. Some of us are 1-3 in some leagues. Some of us are 3-1.
Some of us are 4-0.
Some of us are 4-0. I guess
some of us are 500.
Yeah, you know, hey, even if you're 0-4 in fantasy football. It's not over.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
It's a marathon, not a sprint. You got to hang back. You know, maybe you get like a high waiver priority.
Yeah.
Maybe you hit the jackpot and a couple of stuff. We haven't hit that. Every year in fantasy football, and I guess we should start by talking a little fantasy since we immediately started referencing our own league. And actually, as we speak, I'm trying to pick up a defense for this weekend. It's a situation where we haven't hit the jackpot free agent, where you know the key understudy, the key player who's going to be a league winning backup, and a couple of things about that. I was thinking about that earlier today. I think this is a really important. If you have Jordan Howard, I think Jordan Howard is the one guy that if you're in deeper leagues, maybe he was already drafted, but if not, he should be on your team, and you already know this, but the key for October and going forward is who's the next Jordan Howard? Who's the next guy who is a very valuable, talented understudy, and all of a sudden something happens to the main guy and you got him and you have a league-winning move? And I think that's the key. You know, it's very rarely a wide receiver. There aren't super talented receivers. Receivers tend to be less fragile. So what you want to do at this point is just start picking up some backup running backs that you like, that you think are going to, you know, now that the decks are shifting. So, for example, like Andre Ellington had a really productive 2014, 2013, and then David Johnson came along. David Johnson's not going anywhere, but if he gets hurt, Andre Ellington becomes the key waiver wire pickup, especially this week, as now we know that Chris Johnson went on IR.
Yeah.
Again, Jordan Howard, somebody like C.J. Spiller, who dominated 2011. I mean, I remember in 2011 losing a playoff game to C.J. Spiller, and I think he scored like 38 points in it when he was with the Saints. C.J. Spiller was picked up by the Seahawks this week after bouncing around, was cut by the Saints late preseason, scored a touchdown in his first week. Thomas Rawls is going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. It's going to be his rock for a good while. Again, Christine Michael's another guy you could have gotten a few weeks in.
Mm-hmm. I drafted him late in my draft originally.
So. I'm very happy for you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, even looking at who's available, like I know Joik Bell is not a long yardage type of guy, but he is kind of one of those third down end zone backs.
Yeah.
So if he's good for a touchdown, sometimes that's all you need.
Now, speaking of which, though, I mean, you know, yeah, Joik Bell, I mean, looking at now, our team is, just so you know, I think we have a 12-team standard league, right? Mm-hmm. So there's guys like Josh Ferguson, who's Frank Gore's backup, who's already starting to get a little bit more usage. He's coming off of a 10-point PPR game against the Jacksonville Jaguars, caught 7 passes. Those PPR, if you're a guy who has someone like Todd Gurley or someone like Carlos Hyde, and you play PPR, those are very dealable guys because your fantasy owners get nervous and they get a little shifty. And these are running backs that may carry the ball 22 times a game, and that's super valuable if you're playing standard. But if you have someone like Fozzie Whitaker who's going to catch 8 or 9 passes, or even Josh Ferguson who caught 7 passes last week, you know, you can really, really stack the points. And that makes guys like Todd Gurley a little bit less valuable. So if you can go, you know, Todd Gurley and, you know, a hot waiver wire commodity like Eddie Royal, and flip that for someone like Odell Beckham. You know, Sunday night, you're looking at Packers against Odell Beckham in primetime. That's going to be his big breakout game, I feel like.
So yeah, speaking of Odell Beckham, some people are kind of coming off of him lately because of how his antics the last week or so. Like, how much stock do you put into the way he's been acting or how people are perceiving it?
He's been a little volatile lately.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not worried about it in terms of his career or in terms of how it's going to tear up the Giants. I do think, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's Odell Beckham because and I'm not sure how fair some of this is to talk about, but, you know, a lot of – in NFL circles, there's speculation and rumors that he is a homosexual man. And what that means for football is that he's getting called slurs and being called very specific – hateful, shitty things one-on-one.
Odell Beckham had it?
Odell Beckham, yeah. Yeah.
And, I hadn't heard that.
And it started last year with the Josh Norman game when, you know, that was the game where, like, the Panthers, they came to blows and it just really blew up. And so, like, it's a very unique situation that he's in, and it sucks, and I can see it getting worse before it gets better.
It seems to be playing out like that storyline did in Playmakers where, like, everybody kind of knows, but nobody really knows, sort of thing. Like, it's, you know, people talk about it. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. But that lingering rumor is kind of always there. And yeah, it's interesting. Because he is a talented receiver. He's the fastest to 200 receptions than in NFL history, I think. Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely sad whenever that we do have to deal with this stuff where it is culturally frustrating for a player that can't, if this is true, can't be open about it. And hell, I don't know him at all, so I can't say one way or another.
Yeah, but I mean, there's the only evidence that people have to support on, like, Twitter or within, like, African American Twitter circles are, like, very, very arbitrary bullshit things. Like, there's a video of Odell Beckham taking off his jersey and giving it to, like, another player, and then when the other player turns around, Odell Beckham, like, checks out his ass and, like, It very obviously makes the kind of, like, shakes his head and says, damn, the way, like, a straight male would when, like, a hot woman walks by, right?
Yeah.
So there's, like, a bunch of little shit like that. And then some of it is just, like, people clinging to institutional. I mean, that's the thing, right? Even if he's not, people are attacking, like, his masculinity.
Yeah.
So there'll be videos of him, like, dancing and stuff. And they're like, oh, this guy's soft or this guy's whatever. And so people are using that to go after Beckham.
But in terms of fantasy value, though, you'd still hang on to him?
I can't wait to have Odell Beckham on my team. I would,
sure.
This is the number two ranked PPR player going into the season. If there's any frustrated Odell Beckham owner out there.
Yeah, a lot of receptions, no touchdowns on the season yet, but still.
Well, he's getting the volume, he's getting the targets that I think. You know, he only had 6 targets against the Vikings, which isn't ideal, but I think he's the kind of player who can really, 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 really pop. And be, you know, I'm not worried about Sterling Shepard or the return of Victor Cruz or the Giants. I think the Giants are a pretty good team. The Giants have the right pieces, and the schedule is going to open up and get a little softer. So I certainly expect. And plus, you know, Odell Beckham has missed by a hair some big plays against the Vikings, against the Redskins. So if it's at all possible to get Odell Beckham out of somebody, totally do it. But I think this is kind of a moot point. I think you're going to see him Sunday night, primetime Green Bay Packers, really blow up and back to business. Right. Now, that said, you know, if you have Julio Jones and someone offers you Julio Jones like for Odell Beckham,
no.
You say no. But then you say, I'll maybe do Julio Jones for Odell Beckham and another big piece and a Jimmy Graham or and a C.J. Anderson or and a Jordan Howard even. Because I think as sort of unstoppable as Julio is, he's one of the most targeted players in the league, obviously coming off of that 300-yard game.
Yeah.
I think the Falcons aren't a good team. And I think I know that the Falcons are playing the Broncos and then the Seahawks these next 2 weeks back to back. So I also know that on Monday night, Julio Jones won a whole game without a catch. Matt Ryan is doing it by moving the ball around and finding different receivers. And when he wants to isolate on Julio, he can really exploit it. But the reality is that there's going to be games where he'll go out there with 12 points. Yeah. I think you're looking at back to back games where he scores 10 to 15 points. And then you're going to see a couple of games where he scores 4 points or 3 points or 9 points. And then a couple of monster games. Yeah. Anyway, that's the situation we're in. With respect to how the season has gone for everybody, JC, what are some of the major fantasy surprises that you've seen so far?
Major fantasy surprises. From my end, I drafted Isaiah Crowell pretty late, and I didn't think he would have as great a season as he has been. One of my disappointments has been Delanie Walker. I thought Marcus Mariota was going to get a lot more use out of him, and yeah. He hasn't really done very much for me. Dez has been a disappointment, but that's usually injury, and you know Dak Prescott has kind of proven he's not really take shots deep down the field guy. He's more dink and dunk.
Right.
And that's really not
Dez's game. He didn't for all of his 25 completions, he didn't attempt one pass longer than 15 yards against the 49ers.
Yeah.
And obviously Dez was out there. Yeah, the Dez thing is frustrating because you if he's on your team, you drafted him early,
yeah.
Thinking that he was going to come back and just be 2014 Dez with Romo. He might be. This actually, I think, is actually a pretty good time to go get yourself Dez Bryant. Now that the Cowboys are sort of making it known that you know around October 30th is when they're going to bring Romo out. What you know, I don't want to get into Dak versus Romo. For those that listen to the podcast, I've made my position clear. I think it's pretty obvious that if you're trying to win a Super Bowl, and I think it's clear that the Cowboys have enough pieces that they can contend in the playoffs. Romo has to be the guy because, very simply, he's the more accurate guy who can get the most out of your weapons. And that starts with Dez Bryant, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But from a fantasy perspective, you got Dez on the field. He may be out all of October, but you have Romo and Dez coming back for a pretty charged upper November, and I think you're going to get some serious juice, some serious points out of that. So if you can, you know, stack Dez with someone like an A.J. Green or Julio Jones, Odell Beckham, Antonio Brown, like if you can make him, you're going to get wide receiver one production from Dez Bryant in November, and if you stack him with another big wide receiver one, then you have a pretty awesome 1-2 punch that's going to absolutely carry you down the stretch. So now's a great time to try and make a move for Dez Bryant, especially if you're 3-1, mm-hmm. you know, if 2-2, just feeling good about your team and can afford to give up some assets to have Dez for that run.
You have a little bit of a head start.
Yeah, you have a big head start. And I think that's really what it's all about is taking the pieces that you have and making your team better. Because the guys who always lose, and you know this guy, you'll see him at the vending machine at work. He's the guy who's like, man, I had Aaron Rodgers and I had Todd Gurley and I had all these guys, and then my team lost in the playoffs. And I'm like, yeah, dude, it's because you kept the same team all year. And you didn't flip them. You got to keep getting better. You got to keep making moves. You got to keep working the wire.
So far, 5 weeks, I've made 13 transactions.
That's the way it needs to be. I mean, that's how you win titles. It's never the Aaron Rodgers game that wins you, right? It's always the like, hey, I had Bobby Rainey and he went off late season, right? Like that's what you need. So anyway, that's your fantasy minute. Any sure things? Anything you're buying, selling? Anything you're like super excited to share with respect to fantasy football, JC? Besides the fact that you're 4-0 in the Inside the Locker League.
In PPR and speaking of Dez Bryant, one of the strategies I laid out last week was because Dak seems to be targeting Cole Beasley a lot, and so yeah, I picked up Cole Beasley, and he gave me a nice little 9-point game that kind of put me over the top. So that's not a bad strategy to look at the guys who the quarterbacks are really targeting. Like, number of targets isn't really something I ever used to look at as much, but I've been looking at more this year.
No, totally. I mean, targets are key, and Cole Beasley is one of those players who has these really exciting floors now because he's one of the most targeted guys, right? He can just sleepwalk himself to a 10-point game.
Yeah.
I'm right there with you. I mean, I'm pretty excited for the NFL. I feel like the key to the NFL season is to get a feel for what works and what doesn't as early as possible and move on. You know, you draft a team and certain guys don't pan out and you just have to move on. Jeremy Langford, it was pretty obvious week 1 that the Chicago Bears offensive line sucks and you got to move on because Jeremy Langford's a plotter and he can't really catch out of the backfield. And if you did that, and if you went and got yourself Jordan Howard, then right now you're feeling pretty good, especially in PPR formats. It's abundantly clear that Marvin Jones is playing the Calvin Johnson role for the Detroit Lions, and he's not as big, strong, fast, or tall, But he is getting that level of production. And so if you have Marvin Jones, you quietly have yourself this, like, awesome Marvin Jones imposter. And if you have Marvin Jones as your wide receiver too, then you're in wonderful shape. Melvin Gordon could lead the league in touchdowns this year. You know, LeGarrette Blount has been a 20-plus carry guy a game for so many people. So, again, I think, though, last thing I want to say on fantasy before we move on to real football, if there was any question that the best way to build a team is to go in your draft leagues to go receiver, then receiver, then receiver, then receiver, and with one of those four being a tight end, it's this year. It's getting yourself those high-quality, low risk for injury players, getting yourself something like DeAndre Hopkins and Dez Bryant and Greg Olsen, whatever, and pairing that with your fifth, sixth round running backs, your Carlos Hydes, your CJ Andersons. You have those pieces and you can absolutely own your league. And that's, until further notice, how you need to be building your team week in and week out. So for all you people who drafted Adrian Peterson and Todd Gurley and these players who are even someone like David Johnson, who I love, You could have had Odell Beckham there, Julio Jones there, et cetera. So there you go. And in terms of late round flyers, sure things. I hope you got yourself Will Fuller. I hope you got yourself Tajae Sharpe, who was the wide receiver one in Tennessee, had a very exciting preseason, a pretty good week one. And you, like you said, Delanie Walker, the whole Titans team, they've been bad, but it's also been a really rough schedule. And now things open up a little bit, and I expect them to get a lot
I'm hanging on to him still, but yeah, he's a little disappointed so far.
So, Elliot Fontenette has just joined us.
Sorry, dudes.
It's okay, because your timing is perfect. We just talked, and we're pivoting away from fantasy football.
Good.
Now we're going to talk college football, but before we do much of anything, what I want to do is, for fans of the show, you know that Elliot's a big LSU fan, attended LSU University. That's Louisiana State.
Yeah, we
got to
give him condolences twice.
Boom, 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 boom.
So,
boom, 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 boom. Tell me what you're going to. Just keep going.
So,
we're going to win the run. Tell me just because we do.
Just because
you do what you're going to do.
I never going to get sick of highs. I want you to tell me how you give me a eulogy for the end of the Les Miles years at Louisiana State University.
Honestly, I look at it as the failure of the LSU fan base, because having a college football coach that embodies the personality of what you want at a school and gives you top five recruiting classes year after year and at least gets you a 9-10 win season, this is a failure of the LSU fan base to understand the conference they play in, the competition that we face, and just the nature of the business. These are LSU fans that are starting to act like Alabama fans. Like, these are LSU fans that don't remember the Jerry DiNardo years.
But at the same time, do you feel like it wasn't time either?
I don't think it was time. I really honestly think that Miles should have been there as long as he wanted to. He could have been there another 20 years. He could have been like Mac Brown. And just, I'm not kidding, he could have run it into the ground. But you know what? I always have fun watching LSU football, even though I know his play selection, there's going to be a run up the middle. But it's just, ever since I think it was 2000, and I think it was 12 or 11 when LSU lost that just a heartbreaking game against Alabama in the national championship, when we had beat them 9-6 during the season, and Miles just didn't come up with a new plan, I sort of accepted the type of team LSU was. And it honestly made me better, because I no longer watch LSU football to live and die. I just watch it to enjoy it. And I just feel like if you're going to be a mature fan in this day and age in any sport, you got to be at the point where if you lose, it's not the biggest deal in the world. Don't let a loss mar your enjoyment otherwise.
I sort of respect what you're saying, that he did so much with so little of, relative to what he had to work with. He could have gone to Michigan years ago.
Yeah, he's been loyal to us, and I feel like to pull him in the middle of the season, the thing that bothers me. If you want to fire him at the end of the season, you know what? It sucks, but that would be more respectful. To pull him after he loses on time management, which is Les Miles' thing. It's like, this shit ain't new.
I did hear the rumor mill say that part of the reason why they decided to do it now instead of by now I mean 2 weeks ago, instead of at the end of the season, was they were a little bit worried that he was going to do another kind of weird miraculous win that would
so they were
going to
worry that he was going to win.
Yeah,
that's my problem with this.
Well, the problem is that they also want to make a play on Tom Herman.
But Tom Herman's just that's my point. This is like somebody who's been married to the same person for 20 years. And they're going through a rough patch. And they don't like this. Like they know all their spouse's faults. They just know everything wrong with them. And they see this new person come along. They don't know any of that spouse's faults yet. They don't know any of that person's downsides. All they can see is, man, look at that offense.
Well, I mean, the thing
that's
about
a sexy offense.
The thing about the miracle win that's problematic is, and I mean, we'll get to Charlie Strong here in a little bit, but like it's he's on the hot seat now, obviously.
Which I don't get.
But I mean, in a lot of people's eyes, if he beats Oklahoma, well, then that buys him another year. Every year you beat Oklahoma, that kind of buys you another year, and it shouldn't necessarily be that way.
And I think that he's going to beat OU this weekend.
But that's my point. It shouldn't. I feel like there should be a coaches shouldn't have to. You know, if you don't have a 9-10 win season, but even if you have a 9-10 win season, if you don't win this bowl game, if you don't win the national fucking championship, you are garbage. Because you know what? There are like 120. NCAA teams,
mm-hmm.
You're going to be continuously searching for something you're not going to get.
Okay, but Mack Brown needed to go.
Yeah,
and Mack Brown
got to finish his career out here.
You know he did, but Mack Brown needed to get the hell out of that out of Austin. And you're right, there is no such thing as loyalty in business.
But that's why I get people who talk shit about LeBron going from Cleveland to Miami a bunch of shit, because it's like it's the same thing with an employer. An employer always talks about loyalty when you can leave, but the minute it's time for them to fire you, well, it's an employment at will state. So it's this asymmetric power. So it's like when Miles was in a good position and he could have left to go to Michigan, and I firmly believe the only reason he didn't is that he was pissed at Kirk Herbstreit for putting that shit out before a game. And he said, fuck you to Kirk Herbstreit, which I take every opportunity to say fuck you to Kirk Herbstreit because he's a bit of an ass.
Hmm.
So it's like, he didn't leave, and he didn't leave the other year, and you know we offered him all this money, and it's just like you gotta mean what you say. If you say you're our guy, you gotta be willing to be like, yep, fans, I guess you're pissed. Oh, we're in Louisiana. What the fuck else are you gonna do with your time besides
watch
football?
Okay, so you're saying it wasn't time to. You're saying you would have let him. You would have gotten rid of him, but you would have let him finish the season.
I would have let him finish this season at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
And just told the fans, look, if y'all don't like it, that's tough. I'm in charge of this shit. And if you want to get me out, fine. If I was Joel Levy, I'd be like, hey, if you want to fire me, that's fine with me. Because you got to be able to look yourself in the mirror and be like, I guess there are some things that are worth more than winning. That's all I'm saying. And I just feel like LSU did not show a lot of integrity.
I think, yes, in theory and in all practicality, that is true, but that's not the reality of the situation in SEC West football.
No, the reality of the situation is run by the SEC West football is run by message boards, and no, so is UT.
UT is run by boosters is what it is.
But who are fucking on message boards. UT is run by Orange Bloods. Whatever the fuck they say, oh man, look at that recruiting class. Oh, what are they doing at camp? You know what? 1 week at the beginning of the season, y'all ready to canonize Charlie Strong, and now he's on the hot seat. Just like let the brother work.
It's not that simple. The thing is, in college football, coaching is generally pretty average. And so, if you have a very good coach, you can fix a lot of things overnight. Which is why you know Colin Cowherd always says that NFL guys never respected Les Miles and Mack Brown because they're not seen as good coaches. They're seen as, well, they're pretty good at running their program, pretty good at recruiting, pretty good at this.
But good recruiters, good CEOs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think NFL coaches are, by definition, not as good as college coaches.
That's ridiculous.
I will have that discussion with you right now.
College football coaches they delegate the hard part of the football X's and O's. And then they work on preparation and recruiting and management. That's what they do. And
no,
also,
no.
I mean, just look at this. Isn't like really like if you look at a football look at an NFL coach who is out of shape and schlubby and works 24 hours a day and does nothing but watch film. And then look at a call. Even Jimmy Johnson was on. He was talking to Fox Sports this week, and he said it's way easier to be a college football coach. It's a good life. You can leave at 5 o'clock.
I don't believe that. Like, I think you got some people. I think you have a
theory. You can say,
Elliot, well, if I can say something.
No, you can make the argument. You can say that it's harder to manage 18 to 22 year olds.
That's not what my argument was going to be.
Then what's your argument?
My argument is there's a stratification in both industries. That you got the top of the top. You got Belichick. You got Saban. That's the top.
And Saban couldn't cut it in the NFL.
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, I'm trying to put this the right way.
It is two different skill sets, to be honest.
They are skills. Are you a gym teacher? One is a glorified gym teacher, and one is the X's and O's of it.
One is managing a bunch of mercenaries.
Yeah, no.
People that you, if I have the power to go acquire.
Every game is a new job. Every game is a new PowerPoint presentation.
But you don't have to actually coach those people.
Yes, you do.
They bring themselves up.
No, I think it's harder. You're an NFL coach. You have to scheme and scheme and scheme and watch film and watch film.
But that's the difference between Belichick and the rest of the league is he actually develops his players. And that's what makes him better. That's his comparative advantage.
That's
because he doesn't do what a lot of other coaches do.
You hit the nail on the head. The Belichick thing is... So, has lasted so long because it is not an identity. What Belichick is this morphing fucking glob that changes its identity every game and targets one specific thing.
NFL coaches don't do that.
What NFL coaches do is they have one game, they have a game plan for every game, and every game plan is a giant project. If you're a college football coach, you bring in the kids. You let your assistants babysit the kids. You have your offensive coordinator call the plays, the defensive coordinator call the plays, and then you go and get to play, North Dakota State or UTEP, and then you play your conference schedule. Now, you also don't have to deal with the media. You also get a very favorable media, and you get to be in a small town where you can completely freeze out the media, and then you can hire a PR firm to do a puff piece that works through the local media in Waco, Texas, and defends someone like Art Briles. I mean, seriously.
No, but can I go? Because like I've been listening to what you're saying.
It's just not. This isn't a debate, is what I'm saying.
It's not a debate because you're saying it's not a debate. But see, I have points. That's what makes this a debate.
You have points.
Yes, that you haven't actually refuted.
You haven't made a single point. Give me one point.
I made the point that they're managing mercenaries. They don't have to develop any of these players. The best one develops his players. He can take a guy from Vicksburg, Mississippi, who was working at a fucking Popeyes, and give him such skill, like mature his skills in such a short time that he comes with a winning play in the Super Bowl. Like that's Belichick. But the rest of the league, what they do is they go, "Hey, do I have an elite quarterback? Nope, I'm done for the year."
That's not
Look
true
at
all.
Dallas. Do you think they're going to go to the Super Bowl this year?
Yes.
You got to be out your fucking mind.
Because Tony Romo's going to be back October 30th, and they're going to have a really awesome
run. You mean Mr. Glass?
You haven't made a single point that makes any sense. The question is it hard? Again, here was my question. Maybe you missed the question, so I'm going to give you one last chance. The question is it harder to be an NFL coach or a college football coach? And it's just not even close.
It's intrinsically hard to be. It depends on how we stratify this. Is it harder to be an elite college coach?
Do you think Rex Ryan looks the way he does because he's happy all the time?
He's a garbage person who eats garbage. That's why he looks like that.
But I'm saying, look at Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick doesn't even have time to dress himself, dude. He's just this schlubby guy in blankets because all he does is watch film.
You're
not
bringing up
Rex
Ryan as an example of a good coach.
Look at Urban Meyer.
That's happening right now.
Of an NFL coach.
Of a good NFL coach.
Of an NFL coach.
What has he won in the last 5 years?
Oh, my God. I've been an NFL coach. So, again, it's just way harder. It's just not even close. What you're doing right now is you're doing the, like, boy, the 2001 Miami Hurricanes, bet they could have beat the Tampa Bay Bucks.
I would never say that.
It's that argument.
My argument is in contradiction to that exact statement. I hate the statement people go, well, in all everything team could beat the worst NFL team. That's bullshit because what I'm saying is NFL players are intrinsically better, period. And you don't have to bring them up. All you got to do is scheme. You don't have to develop. You have to take this guy from high school and show him how to be an elite corner.
It's the same exact situation.
What about like Chip Kelly? Football. How come Chip Kelly isn't succeeding in the NFL?
Because Chip Kelly's a hack.
He wasn't a hack in college.
He wasn't a hack in college because he discovered an exploit in the system that I'm just going to run you faster than everybody else. And he didn't actually design for real football. He designed it to hit the corner faster.
No, in college football, you can design gimmicks and you can run on a gimmick and then you can bring in three stars or four stars or whatever, two stars, and you can plug them into a system and you can run that system for 15 years. Just ask Mike Leach. What I'm saying is you cannot do that in the NFL because in the NFL you constantly have to evolve, and so it's a much harder strategy game. It's chess versus checkers. I mean, it really is. So the game itself is so much harder, and it's at a, at such a higher level. Now you're talking about these hypotheticals about personnel management, and those are things that we just can't know. But what we can, what we do know for sure is undisputable. Number one, the NFL game is more complicated, and the NFL game is more competitive and cutthroat, and there's nowhere to hide. And level two, the second thing to keep in mind, is that NFL coaches work at least twice as much as college football coaches, period.
Do we have the timesheets?
That's just it.
I mean, that's a quantifiable claim. Like, do you have the site? That's all I'm asking.
Yeah.
You say in twice. So if they work 1.75 times.
Talk to Jimmy Johnson. Talk to Urban Meyer. I mean, literally, this isn't something that's a hot take. And gentlemen, I have to leave this exact second because I have to go. Now here's what we're gonna do. Here's what we're gonna do, folks. I'm gonna let myself out, and I've talked. Lord knows I've talked enough tonight. JC and Elliot are gonna take you home, and we're gonna talk NFL Week 5. NFL looking into October. We're gonna talk college football landscape, and we're gonna just bullshit and have some fun. And I can't wait to listen to this podcast going into the weekend to see what this sounds like. But gentlemen, I apologize. I have to leave this exact second, and I'll just hang up and listen.
All right, we'll move on to the NFL.
Have we talked about the NBA yet?
I mean, there's not a lot to talk about with the NBA so far.
Except for Golden State, you know, being a cheat code.
Preseason started, and Golden State looks fairly unbeatable. At one point, they over the Austin Clippers. they had a 50-point lead over the Austin Clippers at one point.
The one and only Austin
Clippers. Yeah. There was a picture that I posted where, you know, Steph being the ball handler that he is, the shooter that he is, when he, you know, runs around, penetrates the defense, he's going to draw a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And in the picture on this exact moment, now I ended up looking at the video, it wasn't quite as dramatic as this picture showed, but in the slowdown of this picture, as soon as Steph Curry draws four defenders, he's got three really excellent two excellent three-point shooters in Draymond Green. Who's not an excellent three-point shooter. But, I mean, yeah.
He's streaky, at least.
Yeah. So, they look fairly unbeatable. I think matchup-wise, I still maintain the way Cleveland beat him in the finals. I still like how Cleveland matches up with them because I still like the LeBron-Durant matchup. The young guys that Cleveland has, Jordan McRae and Kay Felder, you're going to hear me talk about them a lot. I love those dudes. They're going to be really great off the bench. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting NBA season considering how dominant the Warriors are going to be. I think the Cavs are going to be fairly dominant. I think this is going to be similar to the second year that LeBron is in Miami. You're going to see a much more happy-go-lucky LeBron. And I think to me, when he's that way, he's fairly unstoppable. Because that's the year that he shot 60% from the field. That's the year that he should have been undisputed the second undisputed MVP. Shaq should have been the first one.
Shaq should have been on the dream team. So it's like Shaq always being slighted.
Yeah. So that's my pre-NBA preview. So
other
far
question.
Is, yeah.
Did you see that? Did you see what Blake Griffin did
with the shoe?
Yeah. He threw a fucking shoe at somebody.
I don't think he did it on purpose.
He fucking aims.
I don't think he was aiming.
Man. Okay. Y'all watch that clip. That's all I'm saying. Okay. I didn't mean to divert. We can go back to NFL.
No, that's fine.
There's not been a diversion since I was late because of fucking Austin traffic.
Yeah.
An hour and 15 minutes on the fucking road.
It happens. It's Austin
traffic's pretty terrible. Now, do you happen to remember, if you wrote them down or if you can remember off the top of your head, your three hot takes to come into the season?
Hot takes. I think I had...
Hey.
Vikings.
Yeah, I think I had something about the Vikings, maybe?
Vikings. Like,
Penny.
Honestly, I don't remember because it's been a little bit, but like, no, I think I said something about Dak Prescott would be pretty good, and that has not gone right.
Doc Prescott? Penny.
Hold on, we're trying to get Penny the dog.
Ramon, I thought you left already.
I'm walking out. Come on,
Penny the dog.
Bye, Ramon. Bye, Penny.
Bye, guys.
Ramon and I were actually talking about that. We were hoping to fit it in this podcast. One of my hot takes was that Minnesota is going to grow to regret giving up all those draft picks for Sam Bradford, and here they are undefeated a quarter of the way into the season.
Yeah, they're looking really good, and I think Sam Bradford fits really well into that system.
Yeah,
it's been impressive. I've always thought he's been a good quarterback. I've always liked him. I've always been rooting for him a little bit, but I'm happy to see that. You know, it hasn't even necessarily been because they played inferior teams. They've just been playing well.
Yeah,
it's been solid.
I mean, it's my hot take, which is actually a lot of what y'all just said and a lot of what Ramon and I were talking about, is watching the NFL this year is just sometimes it's a little bit boring because like I'm watching it and I'm just like, I don't know what the point is because, you know, if I watch a Saints game, Saints playing Falcons, neither of them are going to win a playoff game. So it's like it's becoming more and more like watching regular season basketball. Because it's like, I know the Patriots are gonna come back with a vengeance once Brady gets back. Touchdown, Tommy.
Yeah.
Like, I know they're going to be great. I know Aaron Rodgers is going to have a pretty good year. He seems to be back in shape, and things are going to go for him. Cam Newton's going to be good. I think Denver's going to be good. But the rest of them, in like Arizona dropping those, they should have won a few of those games.
I predicted Arizona was going to win it all this year, and they have been like that is my hot take that got proved seriously wrong so far, at least.
So it's like, you know, if it wasn't for fantasy football, I probably wouldn't be watching that much NFL.
Yeah,
just because it's like the level of competition has so like divided out. It's almost like watching a bunch of exhibition games. It's like, this isn't really that tense because like, the Giants are probably going to get to the second round of playoffs. They're probably going to lose again.
Seattle's going to end up getting it together.
Yeah. So it's like it right now, the class of people in the NFL, it hasn't changed in a long enough time. So the same players are there and they're going to do the same things they did. So it's just like it's sort of like going through the motions. And I wish we could just like maybe I wish I could like put myself in like suspended animation and wake up in December. Like, okay, yeah, it's time now. Let's watch this shit.
See, I would do that, but then I got basketball season. So
man, I can't believe basketball season. I didn't know how early basketball season started. Seems like it started early this year.
It's turning into a little bit of a 12-month sport to compete with the NFL. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the way people think football is going to evolve, mm-hmm. I think basketball is going to end up overtaking it.
Well, yeah, the salaries have already done that.
Yeah, because, I mean, look, for kids growing up, there's really only two sports that don't require a lot of money for kids to play, and that's soccer and basketball.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's why I think it's going to end up becoming a more popular sport.
Yeah, you don't get those head injuries. It's just not as dangerous.
Yeah.
It's like, what was it, LeBron, they recruit him to be a wide receiver, and he's like, nah, they can play basketball. I think I'm good.
Yeah, and I wish that I just had more fun watching both of those. But
that's the problem. It's
that's
like
the problem.
Football is just, at least to me, and this is I'm somebody who didn't like football much until high school. Like, it's just more fun to watch. Like, just and it's because of the hits. If we're going to be completely honest, that's part of the appeal. Is like there's this like human competition element of. I'm going to work out all year. You're going to work out all year. We're going to run at each other. We're going to see the fuck falls down.
See, I don't necessarily enjoy that as much myself personally. Mm-hmm. Like I enjoy kind of the carefully measured chaos of it all.
Mm,
you know, it's the strategy mixed with you never know what's going to happen, mm-hmm. particularly on the college level. That's why college football is my number one sport.
Mm-hmm.
It's all this like time and energy that goes into planning every single little bit of it, mm-hmm. and then one thing could go wrong and everything is turned on its head.
It's like short of soccer, it really requires the most discipline of managing your moving parts because like. You know, basketball, you got five people on the court. You got one that's just so much better than everybody else, they can run the game.
Sure.
If you got, I don't care if you got Aaron Rodgers, if he doesn't have receivers that can get through coverage and stop a jam, like, it's not going to matter. So it's more like you're watching a team in football than in basketball. In basketball, if you're watching a team, it's sort of annoying because then it's like the team starts wearing shit like that's called like strength in numbers. And I'm like, motherfucker. They're going to trade you in, like, two games.
Yeah.
And, oh, by the way, they did. So it's just, I feel like, I think you're right. It's this carefully controlled chaos.
Yeah.
That's so good about it. And I'm talking a lot. I am sorry, dudes.
No, man, it's cool.
It's all right. We've missed you. We haven't heard the Elliot spiel in a while.
Well, it's like, I'm sort of self-conscious because, I gave a few hot takes on, we saw Birth of a Nation the other day. And that film hit me just the wrong fucking way.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm seeing, like, it has 77% on the Rotten Tomatoes. So I'm like, was I wrong? Because, like, I just did not like it as much as some other people did. And I might have to go see it again just to make sure.
Hmm.
Like, because, like, sometimes you can just see a movie and it hits you the wrong way because of just the day you had.
And well, it's kind of hard, harder for a movie, like, for people to be honest about a movie like that, I guess. Like,
that's what I think it is. It's like,
yeah. Because man, I'm not white, but man, that movie elicits the very little white guilt that I had in me.
Yeah, it's like, look, just because I'm saying I don't like the movie doesn't mean I'm on the slave master's side.
Yeah, I'm the whitest member of this group, yeah, or this round table here, but I'm also the brownest of my friend groups. Yeah. That's kind of
I walked out of the theater, I wanted to give you all the cash in my wallet. I'm sorry, man. But I'm sorry for your grandparents.
It's just more that, like, I've read that story, and, like, I'm so well-versed in the Nat Turner story. It wasn't that I didn't like the story, it's I didn't think the director did it justice.
Yeah.
And, like, if you're going to tell a story like that, like, there was a slave revolt in Baton Rouge. Actually, like, I think it was 30 years before, and it also turned out horrible. And it's like, I hate that Quentin Tarantino killed Hitler and the Inglourious Bastards. But
it's rewriting history, but
you got to do something.
It was done of like a kind of self-satisfaction kind of thing. Everyone wants to kill Hitler, so let's finally do it this time.
But it's like, the problem with Birth of a Nation is like that narrative the entire way is making you think like, shit, he's going to win. And it's like, no, he's not. And so when you get to the end, it's like, dude, what story were you telling?
Yeah.
So, okay, sorry, back to sports.
No, that's cool.
So,
I guess we're going to pivot one thing. One thing I definitely did want to talk about is, JC, unfortunately, Ramon isn't here to talk about this either, but as a Longhorn fan, what are your thoughts on Charlie Strong and employment and like hot seat or not? I want to get a little more details on that.
I do see value in stability.
Sure.
It's kind of proven. The longer you do stick with a coach, even through bad times, and particularly in football, because I think football is so much more strongly than other sports, depends on relationships between coaches, player. I think stability is important. I don't think it's good in college for coaches to be swapped out every few years just because the fan base is a little mad. Yeah, sure. I think universities kowtow to fan bases a little too strongly. Yeah, I don't think he should be on the hot seat. I do think...
So, I think he should be on the hot seat, but I think that the idea of getting rid of him after 3 years or even less, if he gets let go...
Yeah, I should agree for you. Hot seat is fine. But, I mean, yeah, like, sit him down, let him know.
It's definitely be like, hey, we need to see some improvement here, but,
but here's the
thing. Still going to be here next year.
Yeah.
I agree he shouldn't be on the hot seat, but honestly, and I'm going to be the person to bring this up, I guess, but as a black man in the American workforce, he knew, because this is something I guess just even as a minority in general, you know that you got to deliver results. There is no fucking benefit of the doubt. The fact that he's lasted this long is amazing me, because that brother, as soon as, like, look at what's his name, Ty Willingham. Like, he built that program back up, and the minute it was okay, oh, we don't need you anymore. Look at Mark Jackson did a good job at Golden State. He didn't take him to the promised land, don't get me wrong, but they didn't even give him the chance. They were like, well, nope, you're not getting the championship, so we're going to bring in Steve Kerr.
Yeah.
So it's like, so Charlie Strong, if he's being honest with himself and just with the world we live in, should have known, hey, I'm taking this Texas job, but I don't have the luxury of, it's going to take me 4 years for my system. That's just not the way shit goes. Now, I tell you what's probably going to happen. They're probably going to fire Charlie Strong if he doesn't beat OU. If he beats OU, he'll probably buy himself another year. They'll probably fire him at the end of the year and get like some like big name Jim Harbaugh walking NCAA violation type coach. Just somebody that like can
I think they're going to make a strong run for Tom Herman. It's going to be between LSU
Herman's good. Like,
he's done some good stuff. The jury's still out, you know. I mean, like, but in the year and a half he's been at Houston, has been really solid.
But no, I think UT needs to, like, if they're going to try to replace Charlie Strong, you can't just go with a Coach Herman. You got to go with like, go try to lure Chip Kelly, like get somebody big.
Yeah, I think with a situation like Tom Herman, who's sort of rising up through the ranks and sort of experiencing a meteoric rise, give it a little bit more time. Like, not to rub salt in the wound, but like, look at Kevin Sumlin in Texas A&M. Like, he was hot shit for a while, and now he's not on anybody's list anymore.
Because
they haven't been as good anymore, but like they're doing much better. But yes, no, I think that's the problem with college football. I guess sports fandom in general is is the highs are extremely high and the lows are extremely low.
Yeah.
And in fact, actually, I'll make the point that this is something that I posted on that I asked on a thread on the college football subreddit the other day.
It's a pretty good subreddit.
Yeah, it's a really good subreddit if you guys are a part of it. But I said I think that probably the worst thing that could have happened to Charlie Strong and UT this year was to beat Notre Dame.
It set these expectations.
Because it set the bar higher than they were ready for.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they were ranked number 11 overnight. Texas is back overnight. And it turns out that Notre Dame is kind of mediocre as well. But like, if they had lost that, if they had like a good, solid, hard battle, then I think that things would have been a bit more tempered. Things would have been a little bit more like, all right, hey, things are all right. But instead, they were like, we're back, baby. We're making this thing happen.
And I agree, but here's the problem. Is you got, and I can name them, you got like maybe 5-7 teams like Alabama, Auburn, Texas, OU, UT, Florida, and Florida State. Those fan bases expect to win.
Yeah.
And they expect to have a flashy, big-name coach. What they do not expect is to get a coach that they grow with. They don't want a Coach Taylor. They want, because like Coach Taylor in Friday Night Lights isn't well-known. He's just like the guy that just sort of comes in and can turn anybody into a good quarterback. These people want, I am Jimmy Johnson, I'm Nick Saban. Like, people, there are a bunch of UT fans that are still fucking hurt that they didn't get Nick Saban. They want somebody that of that level, and I just don't know who else is out there.
Yeah, there's not really anybody. I do think the ranking system puts undue pressure on all of this. Like, mm-hmm. Preseason rankings are dumb.
Yeah, they're worthless.
It's definitely preseason, which is the real problem.
And I've heard people that propose that the rankings should start after Halloween.
I think that's yes. They should start right. I think that's perfect. Yeah.
Or even beginning of October is probably all right, too.
Well, yeah, because there's this bias that gets built into the system that honestly, it favors SEC teams. Don't get me wrong, but there's this bias of you started here. You're going to always hang around there unless you completely fall off the face of the earth.
Yeah. At the same time, even if there were no official rankings, there's still going to be like media outlets. They'd be like, here are rankings of the top teams. And like those still things are still going
to
be.
No, but I think it would be
I do think one of the outliers to that proposition that would be like Louisville and everything Lamar Jackson is doing. Like maybe they wouldn't be top 10 if there hadn't been rankings at all up to this point. Like if you were to start ranking them now, I guess maybe without thinking about rankings, it'd be hard to put them in the top five the way they are now.
But, sure.
No, I mean, yeah, I think the rankings come out too early.
Yeah,
yeah, and absolutely. It's just a matter of just sport outlet discipline. Honestly, I think if the sports journalists had their way, there wouldn't be rankings until probably mid-October, end of October. But I think it's more of a money thing and a page hit thing. Like, it's a very easy article to write. Here's our rankings, and like write it once. And then write about it 30 times, so it's like that's a click factory. So it's like it's more of an integrity of the industry thing. This is really about ethics and video game journalism.
On that note, I think it's probably about time to shut down this podcast. Thank you everyone for listening.
One quick thing.
Oh, one last thing. Yep.
There we go. Go Cubbies.
Oh, go Cubbies!
Major League Baseball playoffs have started. The Cubs, they're still the Vegas favorites. I fucking hate that.
Oh, and fuck Trump.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
bipartisanship be damned. Fuck Trump. Go Cubbies.
And on that note, also go Rangers.
Go Power Rangers.
Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys soon.